Palestinians warn that the move by the Jewish National Fund is another proof for Israel's attempt to illegally seize more land in the occupied West Bank and Al-Quds by forced expulsion of real owners. They say, however, that they will never back down and they will continue resisting these Israeli plans. Mona Qandil, Occupy Ramallah.
The second day of the confidence vote sessions in Iran's parliament started with reviewing the credentials of Ebrahim Raisi's pick for ICT Minister Issa Zarepour. As is the rule, two pros and two cons speak for or against the nominee, who will then defend his credentials for 30 minutes.
I am proud to announce that during my term in the Ministry of Culture and Islamic Guidance, I launched hundreds of science-based firms. Thanks to these efforts in 2011, we exported $20 million worth of software to other countries.
Mr. Zarepour does not have the expertise to run the ICT ministry. Furthermore, he does not have a fixed approach toward Parliament's bill on the protection of cyberspace. He has repeatedly flip-flopped on the issue. Mr. Zarepour, I ask you to clarify your stance. Do you agree or disagree with the cyberspace protection bill?
By the cyberspace protection bill, the legislator refers to a controversial bill recently introduced in Parliament that seeks to fill the legal voids in the Internet. Some believe if passed into law, the new bill would restrict the activities of cyber users, and others say it would ensure the intellectual property of online businesses in Iran.
The bill is yet to be passed into law and is pending now. I think if it becomes law, it will organize cyberspace in our country. It will protect the rights of online users. It will prevent cybercrimes. Every country has such a law. It's for the good of our people.
I think the draft bill needs to be revised. I do agree that there are serious legal voids with regards to cyberspace in our country, but could the new bill be implemented in a way that it would not make people worry about their online activities?
The credentials of the proposed ministers of intelligence, economy, and health were also put to debate on Sunday. Parliament had scheduled to review at least five nominees each day to wrap up the process by Tuesday. But after 2 days, lawmakers have managed to examine only five of the 19 ministerial picks.
Well, lawmakers have vowed to wrap up the vote of confidence session swiftly. They're already behind schedule. They argue that this is because they're trying to be meticulous in studying the qualifications of the nominees. And this, they say, will lead to a new cabinet that has the least friction with people's representatives. Yusuf Jalali from Iran's parliament.
The National and Islamic Forces in the Gaza Strip commemorated the 52nd anniversary of Al-Aqsa Mosque burning by holding a huge rally along the separating border East Gaza. Al-Aqsa Mosque was burned by an extremist Jew in 1969. Palestinian factions expressed their condemnation of Israel's long history of crimes against Al-Aqsa Mosque.
Today marks the 52nd anniversary of the burning of Al-Aqsa Mosque. This incident shows the true nature of this occupation. Palestinians here vow to continue their battle against this occupation across all occupied lands. We remain united in this endless battle with all possible means.
This rally comes in conjunction with the current Israeli violations in Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque, where Israeli regime is imposing the policy of eviction and displacement of Palestinians and keeping their killing and land-grabbing operations in an attempt to Jewidize Al-Quds and get rid of its people.
Palestinians have gathered here to assert the unity of all Palestinians in the face of occupation. Palestinians are here to say no to any Israeli attempts to Judaize the Palestinian lands. Palestinians won't accept any violation against Al-Quds, and the resistance will go on until liberation of all Palestine.
The resistance declared it won't allow Israel to violate Palestinian sanctities and keep the blockade imposed on the Gaza Strip, as they agreed to activate the popular resistance and the return of clashes by the separation fence, stressing they won't remain silent over the Israeli crimes.
Palestinians have proved that they will keep their resistance in the face of all Israeli projects that aim to demolish the Palestinian identity. Al-Quds is the symbol of our history. Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque are our red lines, and we won't accept any Israeli violation of our holy sites. Israeli regime must be held accountable for any action against Al-Quds.
52 years after Al-Aqsa Mosque was set ablaze, Palestinians here call for defending Al-Quds with all possible means until its complete freedom from occupation. Ruba Shabit, Gaza.
Taliban leaders are busy in these days as they are facing the challenge of good governance in Afghanistan. To this end, they have decided to pick up some key steps to prove their capabilities by unveiling a new framework for governance within next days. The Taliban say they aim to keep up consultations with former high-ranking officials, prominent political leaders, and the rest of political activists in order to establish an inclusive government.
We want to establish a government in which all sides, including political groups, ethnic groups, and religious groups, have their share in. We are trying to reach an agreement with other sides in this regard. We are not after war. We are seeking peace and calm for our country.
In the meantime, top Afghan political leaders urged the Taliban to continue its efforts to attract more local and international support. This will not happen, they warned, unless the Taliban listen to the voice of people.
I do not expect the peace plan developed entirely by the U.S. to be fruitful. Therefore, regional countries need to take the initiative and work together on the issue, or at least put pressure on the U.S. to work honestly.
Taliban war comes as thousands of Afghans seek to get out of their country via Kabul International Airport since Taliban took control over the city almost a week ago. The rising number of horrified people in and around the airport has created a big chaos there, resulting to the death of 12 so far. Two of the victims, including a member of Afghanistan's national football team, lost their lives after they fell from this flying U.S. military aircraft. The incident shocked the entire world. Taliban say they plan to investigate reported cases of atrocities by the members against civilians, including journalists. Taliban are going to set up separate teams for dealing with Afghanistan's internal security and financial crisis as well. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
The humanitarian situation in Yemen is worsening amid the ongoing Saudi war and siege. A recent report by the United Nations Population Fund suggests that 20.7 million Yemenis require humanitarian assistance, while over a million pregnant and breastfeeding women are projected to suffer from acute malnutrition throughout 2021. The COVID-19 pandemic, along with the torrential rain and the currency collapse, has also contributed to the deterioration of the already catastrophic humanitarian situation in Yemen, the report said. For instance, by the end of June 2021, nearly 7,000 cases of COVID-19 and more than 1,300 associated deaths had been reported amid concerns that the real number of infections were being underreported. Earlier, the United Nations reported that it had only received half of what was required for the humanitarian response plan of 2021, which was estimated at $3.85 million, despite donors stepping up their support compared to 2020. Observers say Yemen will continue to face a devastating humanitarian situation that risks turning into famine if the international community does not act urgently. They say the only solution is to pressure Saudi Arabia to lift the siege imposed on millions of Yemenis. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
The UK government came under immense fire today after MPs condemned the catastrophic British failures in Afghanistan. During Wednesday's parliamentary debate on the subject, Boris Johnson desperately attempted to convince MPs that Britain's withdrawal wasn't chaotic at all, but with little success.
Mr. Speaker, I think it would be fair to say that the events in Afghanistan have unfolded and the collapse has been faster than I think even the Taliban themselves predicted. What is not true is to say that the UK government was unprepared or did not foresee this.
Before the debate even started, anti-war Labour MPs gathered outside Westminster with anti-war veteran Jeremy Corbyn to denounce British foreign policy.
Many of the MPs who have been supportive of the continued war and occupation in Afghanistan will be sitting today during this debate, which has already begun. Now, this will be very awkward for them, as many of the anti-war MPs who have criticised British foreign policy, particularly in Afghanistan for many, many years, have been proven right following the latest developments in Afghanistan.
British military failures was not the only focus of criticism. Concern over the lack of willingness to help Afghan refugees was expressed too. For the time being, the UK is refusing to recognise the Taliban's administration, but have agreed to accept some refugees, but only time will tell if Britain will honour this pledge or not. Robert Carter, London.
Russian President Vladimir Putin and German Chancellor Angela Merkel held talks in the Kremlin. This is their last summit meeting as heads of state because Merkel will not participate in the upcoming parliamentary elections in Germany. Her farewell visit took place on the anniversary of the alleged poisoning of opposition leader Alexei Navalny.
Despite the fact that we have different opinions, I think it is good that we talk to each other and we intend to keep in touch further.
After the meeting with the Russian President, Merkel called on Putin to release Navalny. Putin, however, said the fight against corruption should not be used as an instrument of political struggle, adding the opposition figure was convicted not for his political activities, but for criminal offenses against foreign partners. The two also touched upon the situation in Afghanistan. Putin said Moscow's priority is to prevent terrorists from entering neighboring countries under the guise of refugees.
We know Afghanistan, and we know how this country is organized and how counterproductive it is to try to impose unusual forms of government and public life on it. Any such socio-political experiments have never been successful and led only to the destruction of states, degradation of their political and social systems.
In addition to bilateral relations, the fight against the coronavirus pandemic, the conflict in eastern Ukraine, the situation in Belarus, as well as Nord Stream 2 and the role of Ukraine as a transit country for Russian gas were discussed.
Merkel managed to defend the Nord Stream. The Americans pressed on her. Germany needs Russian energy. Regarding the situation in Afghanistan, here Germany fully listened to what the Americans were saying, and now Germany has received it in full. The Americans are living in an ugly way, having substituted all their allies in the NATO alliance. This once again showed that Germans that it's absurd to rely on the US. America's visit shows that the stake on in America is doubly wrong, and Germany during the reign of Merkel has repeatedly succumbed to influence from overseas.
On August 22nd, Merkel will fly to Kyiv. Putin asked her to influence the country's authorities to fulfill all obligations on Donbass.
Berlin has always been one of Moscow's main partners in politics and economics. The Russian president expressed hope that with the new leadership in Germany, in the near future, it would be possible to continue the dialogue on resolving the conflict in southeastern Ukraine. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
Turkey says it will decide on Taliban's government recognition after it is formed. Turkish foreign minister said Ankara will not rush into recognizing a Taliban government in Afghanistan as it is still too early for this step.
We are keeping up dialogue with all sides, including the Taliban. We view positively the messages that the Taliban have given so far, whether to foreigners, diplomatic individuals, or its own people. We hope to see these in action as well.
In response to a question regarding Turkey's contact with the Taliban, Çavuşoğlu said Turkey had invited the political wing of the Taliban to Turkey before they had entered Kabul. Earlier, Turkish security sources said Ankara had dropped plans to guard and operate Kabul's airport after the withdrawal of NATO forces from Afghanistan, following footage and reports of chaos taking place there after Taliban's takeover. Turkey says its offer to provide technical and security assistance at the Kabul airport will be further discussed with the U.S.
Turkey will follow the lead of other countries in recognizing a Taliban government in Afghanistan. If the U.S. and EU countries recognize a government formed by Taliban, Turkey will follow in their footsteps. However, I don't think that Turkey will consider the Taliban government as a strategic partner in the region. We expect a delegation from the Taliban to visit Turkey for talks over the transition phase, just like it is taking place with other countries in the region.
The Turkish president had announced last week his readiness to meet with the Taliban leadership. Turkey says so far the Taliban is sending positive messages, hoping that it will be followed with positive actions as well. Turkey is now concerned about the refugee influx it is going to have after Taliban's takeover in Afghanistan. This comes as it has been struggling to revive the economic situation in the country, with a handful of refugees already there amid the coronavirus pandemic. Rahşan Saglam, Istanbul.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 15:20 to 16:20 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 19:20 to 20:20 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
The supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day He appointed for a rising. To Thee belongs praise, for Thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst Thou willed, Thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to Thee belongs praise, for Thou created, then proportioned, and ordained and decreed, and gave death and bestowed life, and made sick and healed, and made well and afflicted, and sat upon the throne and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure. And provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to thee, to be joyful in worshipping thee, to be desirous of thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom thou wilt.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The evacuation of Kabul International Airport is ongoing, and so has the mayhem. This has forced the U.S. president to announce that it may want to extend the U.S. military presence at the airport until all who want to leave the country can actually depart successfully. Meanwhile, the Taliban has rejected that and has said that it will not form a government until all foreign and U.S. forces leave Afghanistan. Is the Taliban ready to form a government, and what will it do about the resistance stronghold of Panjshir? Just some of the questions we'll be asking in this edition of The Spotlight. But first, to get an update, Amin Alami is a correspondent joining us from Afghanistan's capital, Kabul. Lots to cover in a short period of time. Give us the latest that you can, Amin.
Well, Kava, despite American sources here in Kabul say that the situation is under their control in Kabul International Airport, but Taliban authorities say that the American troops have failed to bring the situation under their control in order to prevent the ongoing chaos in the Kabul International Airport. For instance, we can say that at least seven individuals, including an Afghan soldier, were killed as a result of chaos and gunfire inside the Kabul International Airport. In the meantime, there are hundreds of Taliban members who are guarding the entrance gates of Kabul International Airport, preventing the people from entering this area, as well as there are also thousands of foreign troops, mainly American forces, UK troops, French soldiers, and as well as other foreign national military forces who are working to evacuate their own nationals, as well as Afghan nationals who have worked with them. In the meantime, the Taliban are also very busy, not only with the chaos and the in Kabul International Airport and the rest of issues here in the Afghan capital, Kabul, mainly when it comes to governance issues, but they are currently, they have currently surrounded Panjshir Valley or Panjshir province and north east of Kabul. Ahmed Massoud, who is the son of the Afghan legendary commander Ahmed Shah Massoud, is there, and he says that I will resist against the Taliban if they refuse to accept the establishment of an inclusive government that must address the need of the people of Afghanistan and that must respect many other issues such as human rights and democratic values. In the meantime, political consultations and meetings are also underway here in the Afghan capital, Kabul, between Taliban leadership and some prominent political leaders, including some former Afghan government officials. For instance, Abdullah Abdullah, who was the head of Afghan Reconciliation Council, recently met with a high number of Taliban leaders. Hamid Karzai is another key figure who was the former Afghan president. He has also met with top political leaders, as well as Hikmatyar has done so. These moves show that the Taliban are strongly after gaining control, politically gaining control over Afghanistan via gaining legitimacy, first inside Afghanistan, right, and second, they are after gaining regional and international legitimacy. That is why we see that there are some reactions by regional powers and international countries, for instance, Iran, Russia, France, and UK. All of them has had their own viewpoint or stance regarding to the ongoing situation in Afghanistan. For instance, Russia says that Moscow is not concerned or worried about the ongoing situation in Afghanistan, particularly the rule of Taliban over Kabul, because as the Russian foreign minister recently said, the Taliban has proved to be committed to most of their commitments. So this shows that the situation is going to be more complex in Afghanistan. That is why top politicians inside Afghanistan are also calling on the Taliban and the rest of players inside this country to urgently find a solution to put an end to the ongoing situation and a situation that is called vacuum of power in Afghanistan, in order to see a stable Afghanistan. But in the meantime, people are worried, not only here in Kabul, but across Afghanistan. Millions of people have so far been displaced, and hundreds of thousands of them have so far been left the country. The leaving of Afghanistan by its residents are continuing. That is why the Taliban are also trying to prevent the people from leaving Afghanistan behind, because they say that we are here to bring peace, security, and create jobs for Afghans. But as you see, and as we saw on the streets of Kabul here, there are less presence of women here, and it proves that the Taliban needs to work further to prove that they are committed, especially when it comes to their promises.
Thank you very much for that, Amin Alami. We do appreciate it. Let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight, Professor of History at James Madison University, Shah Mahmood Hanifi, who joins us from Washington, D.C. An author and academic and an expert on Afghanistan, Muhammad Daoud Meraki, who joins us from Chicago.
The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Okay, I'd like to welcome you both, and let me start with you, Shah Mahmoud Hanifi, if I may, from Washington, D.C. I don't want to reiterate or repeat something that's been going on in the past days, and that is this messy evacuation that's taking place at Kabul International Airport. When you take a look at what's really going down here, when the U.S. has to have the Pentagon come out and brief reporters and the world daily, every day, as to what's going on there, tell us what that really reflects and what that really shows. Because some are saying that shows how unorganized Afghanistan was in terms of the way that it was executed based on the occupation that took place. And others are saying that, this is a negative reflection on America's waning power. How do you see it?
Well, I think both of those viewpoints carry some legitimacy. The president's need to speak to the American public reflects, I think, a number of interest groups in the American political space, particularly veterans who are quite prominent and animated about maintaining, I guess, some ethics of comradeship in war, or something that necessitates ultimately or justifies the situation in Kabul at the airport. And that situation, to me, is the result of something that must have had some management to it. And I'm not sure about the particular players, but Dominic Khayyumzad would seem to have a role in the bloodless, really very few shots fired in Kabul or elsewhere when the Taliban gained control of the capital. It's quite how that happened is, I think, not accidental, but that the result of the Taliban and Ghani's flight resulted in this situation at the airport that I think involved both very public American statements by the president and very clear visible actions at the airport, but the American empire has been working at a public level, such as we just addressed, while at the same time working at a covert level that we just do not know precisely what communications with the Taliban and other actors, what extractive techniques by helicopters from the Barron Hotel, for example, recently, is going on. Uh-huh. So I think it's always with the American political arena, there is so much that the American public is not aware of and that the government will speak to because of securitization and sequestration of information.
Sure. Well, when you want to take a look at the response over here, Mohammad Dawood Meraki, the Taliban has said that they're not going to abide or listen to the Americans to have an extension beyond that August 31st deadline, in which the U.S. president at this point is contemplating it. Do you think that the Taliban, and they've actually warned the U.S. on this, do you think the Taliban is going to follow up on the threats of the U.S. delayed departure, if you want to call it, from the country?
It's a complicated situation that we have at hand here. You see, we need to look back at what the United States had done post the Doha agreement. And they had agreement that they will not violate such and such and such, whatever they agreed upon. But toward the end, before the victory in Kabul, the United States military has violated that agreement more than 800 times. The Taliban a few times, and it's been observed by others as well. Taliban, trying to use rational thinking for the most part here. they realize that Americans have departed and they have no way of remaining in the country, and they got defeated, whether somebody accepted or not. But they don't want to complicate the situation. They don't want to exacerbate the already complicated situation and add to the animosity and to the onset of conflict. Their aim is political. Their aim is trying to form a government and get a recognition and have services to the people, to the population, and put an end to this disorder that's been going on in the airport. We must also add that this disorder was created by the United States government as a way, also as a brain drain, if you like. There's been a lot of technical people that have been moving out from here, and they have been reluctant to prevent people from entering the airport. They simply mentioned that everybody is welcome as long as they're able to come, and so now people are concerned about leaving the country. You know, remember there was barely any option for them to leave the country. Now they have a free ticket, so to speak, and a lot of technical people are moving and they're leaving the country. So they created this mess, and the Taliban are waiting, hoping they will put an end to it, and they will fulfill their obligation and leave the country by the 31st of August. Okay. But whether the Taliban will react, it's more a political issue at this point than a military one.
Well, when you take a look at the statements coming from the Taliban, as you said, it sounds like they're coherent, organized. Their approach is such that violence has decreased. But at the same time, there are question marks about whether they're actually going to be able to form a government. You have, on the one hand, if you want to call it a new administration called the Taliban that has to run the economy, but they have their funds frozen by the U.S. Overseas. At the same time, you have this resistance stronghold, Panjshir Valley, that they have to deal with. So they still have to, diffuse that and put that fire out. Do you think they'll be able to do all of this and still be able to govern the country?
You see, first of all, this Panjshir business has been really blown out of proportion. It was a mistake of Taliban to resort to suggestion by others, by elders, to let's not increase this unity and let's symbolically do not attack Panjshir and so forth. It took over all of Afghanistan in the blink of an eye. And then their mistake was they should have, once they took over Badakhshan and Tahar, they should have straight came into Panjshir and cleaned it up. But now the West, they need stooges. You see, the Henry Levy, the Zionist philosopher, he has advocated or popped up this individual Ahmed Massoud in Paris and introduced him to the president of France. Like his father, he is also serving foreign interests. There's nothing legendary about him, about his father. His father was a prophet of the Russians.
Let me jump in here to make sure that we understand you correctly. You're saying that Israel is responsible for some kind of support that he is giving this person from what's called the National Resistance Front, Ahmed Massoud. Did I understand you correctly here?
This Zionist by Henry Levy, his name is, he's from France. He has been involved in most Muslim countries in the conflict and instigates so-called resistance in order to create disorder in Muslim societies. And he has done the same thing back in the 90s. He came to Panjshir doing the same thing, and he's done the same thing this time.
Okay.
The issue is this: the Taliban wanted to avoid bloodshed.
Okay. I'm going to ask you to hold on to your thoughts. Let me bring Shah Mahmoud Hanifi back into the conversation here. So let's look at the international either acceptance or rejection or a state of doubt at this point when it comes to the Taliban. For example, the European Union, it has not recognized the Taliban. The EU Commission President saying that, it's not holding political talks with what it calls the militants. and this a week after they seized control of Afghanistan. How do you see the international recognition coming when it comes to the Taliban? Is the Taliban looking for it, or is the Taliban going to be happy with its immediate either acceptance or getting along of with its neighbors? We can mention Russia, we can mention obviously China, and also Iran, that has asked for a reconciliation to involve all groups within the country in order to, you know, establish peace and security.
Well, you know, again, some of the public recognition by China and by Russia are one thing, but behind the scenes diplomatic maneuvering, Pakistan has not been mentioned. Pakistan's strategic depth has been apparently furthered with the Taliban returning to power. And I think the point about American withdrawal is a bit of an overstatement. I don't think the United States will be removing its presence in Afghanistan. Its covert presence, and this does involve intelligence agencies, and in this sense, the international community now has a number of constellations, a group of the European Union for one, but as our previous speaker so helpfully noted, within the European Union, certain countries, in this case France, exert, leverage upon the whole in ways that make potentially France's bilateral perspective on the Taliban broader to include the European Union's, kind of policy position.
Let me bring in the guest then and see if he agrees with you on this, because you mentioned that the U.S. is not going to actually really withdraw, but covertly is going to have a presence. Do you agree with that, Mr. Meraki? Is the U.S., even though it has said it's withdrawn itself, but it's going to have some kind of a presence, which then I ask you, does that mean that directly, it's going to somehow have some kind of contact with the Taliban?
The contact Taliban will have contact with everyone in the world, all the governments. And the U.S., of course, has been asking Pakistan, has been asking Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, as well as Kyrgyzstan and other countries for military base. They are worried, supposedly, this boogeyman they call Al-Qaeda is going to evolve again out of nowhere with supposedly 150-something people in 2001, and then it's been obviously hatching exponentially. It's not disappearing, and so their perspective is that they want to be vigilant in the region. And the fact of the matter is, the United States all along was concerned to be present in Afghanistan in order to monitor activity in China and Russia, and also to contain whatever they choose to contain, and also instigate domestic disorders in those societies, contentions that were there, they wanted to manipulate it for their own end.
Okay, I'm going to ask that question. I'm sorry, because we're fresh out of time. In 30 seconds, if you can, Shah Mahmoud Hanifi, will the U.S. continue its cooperation one way or another with the Taliban, perhaps for its own means, such as countering China and maybe even with an eye on Iran?
I believe, again, in some form, yes, the United States will continue to engage who's ever in power in Kabul. And I think the support that the United States may extend to not just Shah Massoud, but Saleh, who is there now as well, will remain a conduit of influence in the political equation of Afghanistan.
Unfortunately, I got to jump in. We're just fresh out of time on this. Thank you so much. Let me thank our guest, Professor of History, James Madison University, Shah Mahmoud Hanifi. Thank you. And academic author and expert on Afghanistan, Mohammad Dawood Meraki. And, of course, Manami Nalami at the top of the debate. I'm sorry, at the top of the spotlight. From Mikoa Tawai and the entire team, it's goodbye until next time.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
ایمان را در خودتون تقویت بکنید، ایمانی که هم در اینجا شما را شرافتمند می کند و هم در پیشگاه حق آبرو دارید و با آبرومندی وارد می شید به تخت اعلی.
In the path of the Imam.
Dear listeners, we're going to continue discussing Imam Khomeini's testament. The father of the Islamic Revolution emphasized the safeguarding of the revolution and the Islamic Republic system is the greatest obligatory act. In today's program, we're going to touch upon his concerns about the enemy's conspiracies to disappoint the people from Islam and undermine their unity. Please stay with us. Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, used to say that among the conspiracies of the enemies is to demonstrate Islam as inefficient to adapt itself to the problems of the modern world and to tackle problems of contemporary man. He used to warn the masses and scholars that two groups of people are trying to depict Islam as unable to solve social and political problems. The first group ignorantly considers Islam far from the social and political arenas of human life, and the second group wickedly denies the political identity of this religion. The Imam wrote in his testament, "One of the important plots which can be seen, especially during the contemporary decades and particularly after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, is the widespread propaganda with different dimensions to disappoint the nation, especially the selfless Iranian nation, from Islam. Sometimes they say ineptly and expressly that the laws of Islam that have been passed 1,400 years ago cannot administer countries in the modern era, or that Islam is a reactionary religion and opposed to any innovation and civilization, and that in the modern era you cannot keep countries away from global civilization and its manifestations. Such foolish and occasionally sly and devilish propagandas are forged in the form of advocacy of Islam by raising issues like saying that Islam and other divine religions are engaged in spirituality, worshipping and praying, and government and politics are against their spiritual aim and purpose. And sadly, the second type of propaganda, separation of religion from politics, has affected some religious scholars or ulama and religious people who are unaware of Islam to the extent that they even consider interference in government and politics as sin and transgression. This is a great catastrophe that Islam has been suffering from." The founder of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, made it clear that individual and social laws of Islam do not become outdated with the passage of time. Imam Khomeini reiterated that this claim is like saying that the laws of mathematics change with time. He wrote in his testament, "As for the first group, it should be said that they are either unaware of government, law and politics, or they partially feign being unaware because execution of laws on the basis of justice and prevention of injustice and oppressive rule and spread of individual and social justice and prohibition of corruption, indecency and various kinds of waywardness and freedom based on the criterion of intellect, justice and independence and prevention of colonialism, exploitation and worship of others instead of God, and implementation of divine fixed rules, retaliation and specific rules on the basis of justice and fairness, and hundreds of the like are not the things to become outdated with the passage of time. In the history of mankind and social life, this is quite clear. This dispute is like saying that the laws of physics, the laws of science, and the laws of mathematics change with the passage of time, and that other rules should replace them. Claiming that Islam is opposed to innovation is no more than a foolish allegation, because if the manifestation of civilization mean inventions and advanced industries, Islam and no other monotheistic religion have been or will ever be opposed to it. Rather, science and industry are emphasized in Islam and the noble Quran. Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, also said in his testament, "As for the second group who design sly schemes and consider Islam separate from rule of politics, these ignorant people should be told that the Holy Quran and the practice of the Messenger of God, blessings of God upon him and his messenger, have so many laws on rule and politics that they exceed other areas. It is rather due to negligence of many ritual political laws of Islam that have caused these catastrophes. The Holy Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, formed a ruling like other ruling systems in the world, but with the motive of spreading social justice. That the first caliphs of Islam had vast rules and the rule of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, was founded more vastly with the same motive are among the axioms of history. And after that, gradually the ruling system was in the name of Islam, and now too there are many who claim to follow Islam and the Holy Prophet, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, in Islamic ruling system." Imam Khomeini also wrote in his testament, "I hope all writers, socialists and historians will take Muslims out of this mistake. What has been said that the messengers were engaged in spirituality and government and the affairs of world are rejected, and that the divine messengers and saints would refrain from them, and thus we should also follow them, is an unfortunate mistake, whose consequences are to corrupt the Islamic nations and opening the way for the bloodthirsty colonialism. Because what is rejected are the satanic, dictatorial and oppressive rules, which have been prevented due to seeking dominance and pervert worldly motives that they had. But the rightful rule for the benefit of the downtrodden and prevention of oppression and injustice and for establishment of social justice is the same principle, for instance, of Prophet Solomon, the son of David, peace be upon him, and Grand Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, and his great legatees would try for it. This is among the greatest obligations, and the maintenance of it is among the loftiest worships, as the healthy politics that existed in these rules is among the necessary affairs."
comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.